There are classic literary ghosts. Hamlet's father, the headless horseman, Moaning Myrtle. But some of the best writers today like blurring the line between the living and the dead. One of them is Dan Shaun. His short story collection, Stay Awake, is about people who are alive but feel like ghosts. Here's a bit from one of them.
More and more, he thought, his days at the grocery store were like being in a zombie movie, except that here the undead appeared to be too depressed to be cannibals. You didn't even realize most of the time that they were dead. And he had the worrisome thought that he would look up and there would be his mom, or there would be he himself, Patrick Lane, gray-skinned and surprised-looking, standing at the end of an empty checkout aisle. It had occurred to him that if the undead don't realize that they are dead, he might easily be one of them himself.
So you were really drawn to the dark side from
early
on.
I was, and I don't quite know why, because I was a really scaredy kid. I was terrified of the dark. I remember being so afraid of The Wizard of Oz that I had to watch it from outside the room. I'm standing in the door so that I could slip out whenever the witch showed up. But for some reason, at the same time, I was really like magnetically drawn to this sort of scary stuff. And I think it had to do with wanting to find a way to conquer it, or at least to know it.
So people are talking about this new book as a collection of ghost stories, and you've talked about it too that way, but we're not talking about, you know, the white ghost and the sheet kind of thing.
No, so not. I don't think there's even anything supernatural that happens in most of the stories.
But would you still call this a collection of ghost stories?
To me, ghosts have to do with the things that we can't quite escape, even though they're not tangible. I think a lot about the people that we were in the past and whether those people still exist in some way. I also think about the ways in which we try to escape our pasts. And I think those pasts contain ghosts for all of us.
He had been a different person back then, a drunk, a monster. At 18, he married the girl he'd gotten pregnant and then had set about slowly, steadily ruining all their lives. When he'd abandoned them, his wife and son, back in Nebraska, he had been 24, a danger to himself and others. Years later, when he was sober, he wanted to own up to his behavior, to pay the back child support, to apologize, but they were nowhere to be found.
We should talk about, for example, the first story in the book, The Bees.
Yes.
The setting is in some ways the most mundane kind of setting you could imagine. This character is, he drives a truck for UPS?
He's a UPS driver, yeah. He's just married. His wife's a nurse. They've had a kid. They're really pretty happy, except then their son starts having these night terrors, I guess you would call them. He wakes up screaming, and this brings up a secret that the main character has been hiding, which is that when he was younger, he had another family that he had abandoned. Doesn't know if they're alive or dead, but begins to feel very certain that the son that he abandoned is out to get him.
In the dream, DJ is older. He looks to be 19 or 20, and he walks into a bar where Gene is hunched on a stool sipping a glass of beer. Gene recognizes him right away, his posture, those thin shoulders, those large eyes. But now DJ's arms are long and muscular, tattooed. There is a hooded, unpleasant look on his face as he ambles up to the bar, pressing in next to Gene. DJ orders a shot of Jim Beam, Gene's old favorite. "I've been thinking about you a lot ever since I died," DJ murmurs. Gene puts a trembly cigarette to his mouth and breathes on it, choking on the taste. He wants to say, "I'm sorry, forgive me," but he can't breathe. DJ shows his small, crooked teeth. "I know how to hurt you," DJ whispers.
And then I won't give away what happens, but it's very, very creepy.
Good things don't happen, generally, in this book.
So I wanted to ask you about creating the atmosphere of a ghost story, because, you know, we were talking about America being haunted. I think you see that even in the American landscape, at least in the landscapes that you create in these stories. Is that something you really thought about consciously?
Well, I'm drawn to that kind of landscape. And I grew up in western Nebraska, which has a really stark kind of beauty, but also a sense of emptiness and inhospitality. I think about the town where I grew up, which was a little grain elevator town on the Union Pacific Railroad line. I Google mapped it recently, and it's not there. It's just not there.
So you come from a ghost town.
Well, and I live in one now. There are a couple of stories that are set in Cleveland post-economic bust 2008 disaster. And there's this sense of foreboding in these empty houses and overgrown lawns and boarded up storefronts that I see a lot of. And I know that the Cleveland Chamber of Commerce is going to hunt me down and kill me, but I love Cleveland. I'm not talking down on it, but there is something about that part of the landscape that's really inspiring to me and really interesting, even as it's kind of spooky.
Which makes me wonder, is America haunted?
Oh, it's incredibly haunted. It's haunted by not only the things that we want to reinvent, but also by the things that we want to forget, that we don't want to talk about. And, you know, so much of our politics is about not talking about things.
So I wanted to ask about your personal reasons for being drawn to some of the themes that we've been talking about, kind of hauntedness and the ghosts of lives not lived or mm-hmm. lives past. You were adopted.
Yeah.
So is that the kind of thing you thought about as a kid? Were you one of those kids who lay awake and thought about what other life could I be living?
Yeah, well, I think that's sort of the condition of being adopted in some ways, is that it asks you to think about some of the questions that other people don't necessarily have to think about, although I think it applies to everyone. I mean, I could have been adopted by any number of people. Would I have been a different person? Would I have had a different life arc than I do?
And we're raised by different parents at different stages of our lives.
Yeah.
You know, it's not as though our parents are the same people all the way through, are they?
Do you ever have that like weird realization when you're hanging out with your kids and you think, oh, my mom was this age when she was hanging out with me, and this is what it felt like to be her? And suddenly you see them in a very different light. That's another kind of ghost, I guess. Mm-hmm. You get to see the ghost of your mom as she really was, or as she maybe was experiencing, instead of mom, which is a completely different relationship.
So far we've been talking about the creepier side of ghosts, but you mentioned you also lost your wife. I know she died a few years ago from cancer. Did that change for you? Did it bring you new sorts of thoughts about ghosts?
Well, I think that losing my wife has been sort of like a defining thing for me in the last few years, and has really altered the way that I exist in the world. I think the saddest aspect of it is that I didn't really get to see her ghost, or I haven't yet. You know, I expected that in some ways it would be the most natural thing that I would see her. And in some ways the most unnatural thing is not seeing her. She's just not there.
She was a writer.
Yeah, she was a writer.
A writing teacher, your writing teacher.
She was my writing teacher. We were actually together since I was 19. Basically, my entire adult life was spent with Sheila, and we shared a lot of things. We shared, you know, a sense of humor, a sense of, you know, of the importance of writing. We were both teachers. We were one another's biggest fans.
But I was wondering what you do have is her books.
I do have
her
books.
She was a short story writer, and she published her first novel, sadly, posthumously. It came out after she died, but you have all those stories, which you must read and reread, find new things in.
Yeah. I'm actually in the process of editing her last short story collection, which she was working on when she died. It actually took me longer than I feel was proper to get the guts to go back and start editing it. It was pretty hard. I mean, I think it's getting to a point where you can go back to those stories as if you're visiting the lost person. For a long time, it was too hard to visit because you knew that you couldn't stay.
Yeah.
Yeah. You mean they weren't really going to come back with you. I'm just thinking that sales of antidepressants are going to rise after this episode of To the Best of Our Knowledge has aired.
Well, but I think the point of your of what we've been saying and of your fiction is that the state of being haunted is not necessarily such a bad thing.
No, I don't, and I don't think it is. I think sometimes that is an American problem of thinking that it would be fantastic to be happy all the time. I don't think it would be fantastic to be happy all the time because I think you need the other side of it to be really happy. And that part of going to this other place where you look at ghosts and you think about your own mortality and your own mistakes is one way to go back to your life right now and be happy and grateful for it.
Stay away. Don't nod and dream.
Stay Awake is the title of Dan Shaun's book of short stories.